and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 476 for Wednesday, the 18th of November, 2015. My name is Harry Lloyd, and I'm here to bring you another little bit of a solo show to talk about the one or two bits of testing that have been going on, as well as go over the provisional entry lists, which we didn't have a chance to get to during the Valencia weekend, as they'd come out just before. First of all, a big thank you to both Jules and Martin for all the hard work they did at Valencia. I did manage to briefly catch up with them, but as we'll get to in a second, one or two activities I was up to meant that there was only really time for a brief chat, so we couldn't really record anything other than that little bit of an intro. Also, big thank you to David Emmett for the time that he gave to both Jules and Martin. Unfortunately, both Jules and Martin are still recovering from their Valencia trip, finding it a bit hard to adjust to the jet lag. So that's why I'm here, and I decided to do it on my own to try and get us back on a more regular schedule. Unfortunately, with various activities and all the racing going on, we were sort of pushing the show on Saturday morning sometimes, which wasn't quite ideal for what we want to do here at Motopod. So trying to get you back on that regular Wednesday slash Thursday hype. No interviews this week, although hopefully in the future we will have one or two coming up. I know that both Jim and Dave are working on one or two things, and hopefully we'll have some more news on that as and when it comes. But now to the most important part of the show. A big thank you to John Hart and Morten Johansson for their generous donations to the site. As always, if you go to motopodcast.com and look at the left-hand side of the website, there is a link so that you can donate through PayPal. You can donate either a one-time lump sum, be it big or small, or you can sign up for a recurring subscription. And that really, really does help Motopod keep trucking along. This year's been, you know, we've been able to put out the show pretty regularly the last few years, and hopefully we can keep doing that, and hopefully we can keep plowing through the off-season. We do have one or two ideas for the off-season show, as we'll get to in a tiny bit as well. Most of the slightly air quotes smaller domestic championships are now over, so hopefully either next week or the week after we can have Scott Bolton come on to talk about Moto America. Scott, if you're listening, please send me an email, because my mind is like a sieve and I will forget. And as well, we'll also talk about the CEV, the CIV, and maybe the All Japanese Road Race Series if I can find any information on that. But just quickly, speaking of the FIM CEV Repsol, that concluded in Valencia just after the MotoGP race. It was a pretty hectic week in Valencia, actually. So there was the MotoGP race, the MotoGP test that we'll get to. Then it was the CEV with Moto3, Moto2, and Superbike. And then there was a private Moto2 and Moto3 test. So if you had come to Valencia, you could have really stayed and really enjoyed a lot of motorcycle racing in that whole week space. But luckily things are starting to calm down a bit, you know. I think that all of us maybe need just a brief break from the motorbikes, but for right now we're still enjoying it. But anyway, getting back to the CEV, we had three champions crowned in that championship. Carmelo Morales won the Superbike Championship, but he managed to win that back in Jerez. Then Edgar Pons managed to win the Moto2 Championship ahead of Xavi Vierge. Both of them will be moving to the World Championship, as we'll get to with the provisional entry lists. And then in the Moto3 Junior World Championship, the Moto3 aspect of the CEV is really the main draw. There's a lot of young talent in there, and you know, everyone really comes along to see these guys. I've never seen so many riders in a domestic series with fan clubs as in the CEV, but it was Nicolò Belega, the protege of Valentino Rossi, who managed to take that championship. He only took one win the entire year, but he did manage to finish every race and scored 7 podium finishes out of 12 races. So I'd really recommend for everyone, if you are a bit bored, you know, missing the bike racing, search CEV Repsol on YouTube. And if you're in basically any country other than the UK or Spain, you should be able to watch those full races for free on YouTube. And if you are in the UK or Spain, then I'm sure that all of our ingenious listeners in Motopod land will know one or two things to have a cheeky bit of a Google to get, say, a YouTube VPN or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, if you have any listener feedback, as we said, hopefully we'll be doing a domestic series off-season show, but Motopod at Motopodcast is the email address to send all of your listener feedback. We've had a fair few emails over the last few weeks, and most of them have been replied to. We had a fair few emails from Richard Jowett, who seems to have suggested that Minions, the air quotes lovable yellow things from the Despicable Me series, should somehow be involved in MotoGP. I sort of stopped reading that email thread as soon as photos of Minions started being posted, because I think that Minions are pretty stupid. But that's another story for another day. We also got an email from Gary Shavitt. And yeah, a big thank you to everyone out there in Motopod land. Motopod@motopodcast.com is the email address. We'll probably do a whole email show at one point in the off season, because we do have a fair few stashed away. Because unfortunately, one of the downsides of being good at replying to emails is that we sort of have the entire conversation around the email, but with the person who sent it. So then we sometimes forget to talk about it on the show because we felt like we've already answered it. But yeah, motopod@motopodcast.com, all of those emails are very welcome. And some of you listeners out there do have some very interesting ideas and views. And also a big thank you to everyone out there in Motopod land for about, I'd say 95% of you, almost 100% of you who emailed in, for being so rational in regards to the recent polemics in the paddock. You know, all of the Valentino Rossi, Marc Marquez drama. I was genuinely very impressed by everyone and how they managed to stay level-headed for the most part. I was kind of going to talk about the whole situation a bit more on this show, but I felt like David Emmett, Jules and Martin sort of covered it pretty much. And, you know, now that the season's over, it's sort of beating a dead horse in more or less terms. So I think it's best to just move on. You know, all of the riders have moved on and is now squarely focused on 2016. Speaking of 2016, we do have the provisional entry lists that have come out. Obviously, these could change, and as you know, as the name suggests, are just provisional. These came out just before the Valencia GP, so many of you may have already read them. But for those who haven't, we'll just quickly run down them. So we'll start with MotoGP. MotoGP is more or less the same. Andrea Dovizioso riding with Ducati. Stefan Bradl with Aprilia. Hector Barbera with Aventia. Obviously, there's no more open class next year, as we'll get to with testing. So it's all one class. Daniele Petrucci with Octo Pramac Racing, GP15. Alex De Angelis with the IOTA Racing Project. Alvaro Bautista with Aprilia. Maverick Vinales with Suzuki, Danny Pedrosa, Rapsol Honda, Andrea Iannone, Ducati Team, Cal Crutchlow, LCR Honda, Bradley Smith, Monster Yamaha Tech 3, Alicia Spargo, Team Suzuki X-Star, Jack Miller with Mark VDS Racing. Interestingly, Jack Miller is with Mark VDS Racing, and as we'll get to, Tito Rabat is with Australia Galicia Mark VDS. So slightly different contracts there. Miller obviously contracted directly to HRC. With the EICMA bike show going on, Honda did send out quite a big email about all of their racing activities, not just in MotoGP, but also in, you know, Enduro and Trials and Motocross and all that sort of stuff for next year. And they put a star next to all of their factory riders, and Jack Miller had a star next to his name, just like Danny Pedrosa and Marc Marquez. But back to the provisional entry list, Paul Espargaro staying with Tech 3, Scott Redding moving to Pramac on the GP15, Valentino Rossi staying with Movistar Yamaha, Eugene Laverty, Aspar, but now with Ducati, Tito Rabat, as we said, Australia Galicia Mark VDS, Hernandez, Aspar on the Ducati, both Laverty and Hernandez, as well as Baz and Barbera, will all be on GP14.2s. Whereas all of the other guys will be on either a GP16 or a GP15. Gigi Delinea, the sort of technical genius behind Ducati in recent years, has said that his plan is for all of the Ducati engineers and mechanics to have huge sit-downs at the end of the day, have big 2-3-hour meetings to compare data and talk about how to get all of the Ducatis faster. So it'll be really interesting to see if that more communal approach can help Ducati. Obviously, with 8 Ducatis on the grid, they're now the biggest supplier in MotoGP. Ducati have been there several times before, you know, at various times. But it'll be interesting to see what Ducati can do, because obviously with the factory team and the GP15, they've made big steps forward. And with the spec electronics and the Michelin tyres, you know, it could potentially roll the field on its head, but we'll get to testing times a bit later. Back to this entry list. Keep getting distracted, sorry. Loris Baz, Aventia Racing Ducati, Marc Marquez, Repsol Honda, and then Jorge Lorenzo staying with Movistar Yamaha. For those interested, Jorge Lorenzo is down as running number 99 next season and not the number one plate. Then on to Moto2. Moto2 has probably the most changes, and is actually a class I'm really interested in seeing next year after Moto2 was, in all honesty, a bit abysmal this year. You know, Johann Zarco absolutely dominated the class. He, you know, he was untouchable. He had, you know, a 100-point gap at one stage in the championship, which is, you know, mind-blowing. But there's a lot of young talent coming up into Moto2, and one or two riders changing seats that could make for a really interesting season. So we have Jesco Raffin staying with Stop and Go Racing on the Kalex machine. Jesco Raffin didn't really do anything, so we'll see what he does. Simone Corsi moving to the speed-up team in the place of Lowe's. Corsi, always aggressive, could be nice on the speed-up. Johann Zarco staying with IO Motorsport as the defending champion. Lorenzo Baldassarre staying with Forward Racing. Forward Racing, as we've said before, have obviously pulled out of MotoGP for next year and are moving to the World Superbike paddock with MV Augusta. They have their first test with Marco Melandri coming up. Marco Melandri had tweeted saying that he wasn't going to test with them, but then put a tweet out saying, no, that was just a joke. So maybe stick to the day job, Melandri, because your jokes aren't much better than your riding. Anyway, interestingly, joining Lorenzo Baldassarre will be Luca Marini, half-brother of Valentino Rossi. Marini was racing in the CEV Moto2 Championship this year. He put in some really strong rides. He's definitely a very young and aggressive rider. But interesting to see that he's already been moved into the World Championship. Personally, if I was a manager, obviously I'm not, you know, I barely know what I'm talking about on this show. If I was his manager, I probably would have had Marini stay another year in the CEV. But I guess if you have the opportunity to go to the World Championship, why not? He'll also be with the Ford Racing Team. So it seems like the Ford Racing Team is getting a fair bit of VR46 Academy support. Obviously, both Baldassarre and Marini are VR46 riders, and they will both be on Kalex machines. Then Sandro Cortesi, number 11, staying with the Dynavolt Intact GP team. Interesting to see if Cortesi can finally deliver and get more than one podium a year. Tom Lutie staying with the Derringer Interverten team, also staying on a Kalex. Interesting. Rathapult Willerott is coming back to racing. Rathapult Willerott, what to say about the boy? I mean, you know, he was good in 250s. He had a couple of good rides when Moto2 first started. Then he sort of, air quotes, retired when Grassini fired him. Then he went to World Supersport. And then he obviously got screwed over in World Supersport by the core Honda team. Got replaced by PJ Jacobson. Jacobson did well on the bike. But now Rathapult Willerott is back in Moto2 with Idemitsu Honda Team Asia on the Kalex, replacing Aslan Shah. So interesting to see what he does. Efren Vazquez finally leaving the lightweight class. Pretty incredible. Efren Vazquez will be running number 17 next year, as Lorenzo Baldassarre already had dibs on the number 7. Vazquez will be on the Suter with the IOTA Racing Project. So interesting to see what both Suter and Vazquez can do. Vazquez is probably the only man in the world who is smaller than Danny Pedrosa. So I'm really interested to see how Vazquez does do on a bigger bike. I was talking to someone and they said that Vazquez was first discovered when he was racing a 600cc Movie Star Cup in Spain. So clearly he is used to the big bikes, but I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Xavier Simeon, he moves to the QMMF team on a speed-up machine. Franco Morbidelli moving to the Australia Galicia team on the Mark VDS Kalex. It'll be interesting to see what Morbidelli can do as well. I keep using the word interesting, really need to stop doing that. But Morbidelli, definitely one of the most aggressive riders on the field. He had a great start to the season, but then that unfortunate double leg break when he was out motocrossing with Valentino Rossi sort of ended his charge. And when he came back, he still wasn't at full fitness. I saw him at the MotoGP test and he was limping around like you wouldn't believe. So hopefully he can get fully fit. Sam Lowes switches to the Grassini squad, obviously the first of a three-year deal with the following 2 years in the MotoGP class. During the private test in Valencia that I mentioned earlier, Lowes has been just absolutely pounding out the laps and really working hard on his race pace and with the hard tyres. So despite Lowes' times being about fifth fastest in those practices, I definitely keep an eye out for him. Then we have Marcel Schroeter moving to the AGR team. Then Aslan Shah moves to the JP Moto Malaysia team, with JP Moto switching from Suter to Kalex. Then we have Federico Fellini, another rider out of the VR46 Academy, although someone told me he got fired from the VR46 Academy, but then I saw a VR46 Academy patch on his leathers. So not quite sure what Fellini is up to, but he'll be with the AGP Racing team on Suters. Now, as far as I can understand, AGP Racing is what most people would know now as Italtrans Racing. Italtrans Racing, the team that ran Mika Kallio alongside Morbidelli and then Edgar Pons towards the end of the year once Callio left. So it looks like the Italtrans sponsor, Italtrans, I think they're refrigerator trucks in Italy or something. They've gone to a different team, which we'll get to in a second. But yeah, AGP, as far as I can tell, is what the Italtrans structure is now. Takaki Nakagami stays with the Idemitsu Honda Team Asia on the Kalex. Interesting that Nakagami's still in Moto2, you know. After he had that incredible year where he had a run of three podium finishes, lots of people were saying that he'd basically have a whole MotoGP team made around him so that, you know, he would be the new Honda golden child. But since then, Nakagami's fallen on some hold times. Then Isaac Vinales, number 32, joining the Tech 3 squad. Good luck, Vinales. Interestingly, Alessandro Tonucci joins Tasca Racing. Tasca Racing switching from the Mistral 610 Tech 3 bike to a Kalex next year. Luis Salom moves to the Stop and Go Racing team alongside Jesco Raffin. Alex Rins stays with the Paginas Amarillas HP40 squad. Rins, you'd have to say, is one of the championship favourites alongside Johan Zarco. Miguel Oliveira moves to Moto2 with Leopard Racing and Kalex. Axel Pons stays with the AGR team. In Axel Pons' defence, he actually did have some strong rides towards the end of the year. You know, he had that front row start in Australia and, you know, his qualifyings were getting better. So hopefully he can just stop crashing. Danny Kent, he moves up with Leopard Racing alongside Miguel Oliveira. Then Mattia Pizzini joins Italtrans Racing team. And now this is where the Italtrans sponsorship has gone, I think. It seems like Mattia Pizzini is more or less sort of organizing his own team and he's gotten Italtrans as a sponsor. But again, I'm not 1,000% sure. Hafiz Siren, he stays with Petronas Raceline Malaysia. Edgar Pons, the CEV champion, as I said, he moves to the Paginas Amarillas HP40 team. He obviously had some wild cards during the year and then ended the last five races? Yeah, last five races of the year in place of Mika Kallio with the Italtrans squad. So far, any of the top CEV riders who have moved up, your Jesco Raffins, your Florian Alts, they've really done nothing. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if some people listening to the show had never heard of Florian Alt, unfortunately. So hopefully Edgar can do more. They changed the CEV rules this year so that they were on the same tyres and the same size tyres as the Moto2 World Championship to try and make that transition easier. Julien Simon stays with QMMF Racing. Robin Mulhauser somehow still stays with Technomag Intervetten. Alex Marquez stays with Australia Galicia Mark VDS. Dominic Agata stays with Technomag Intervetten, keeping the, what do they call themselves, the Swiss Mafia together. Remy Gardner, he moves up to the AGP Racing squad with the Suda. Really interested to see what Remy can do. You know, sure, he has a famous dad, but in Phillip Island, Remy was able to battle inside the top 10 on that Mahindra that isn't really competitive. And as we've said before on this show, Phillip Island is a great circuit for demonstrating what a rider can do more than what a bike can do. So I think there is something inside of Remy Gardner, and he's not just in the World Championship on merit of his last name. Ricky Carduce stays with JP Moto, switching from Suter to Kalex. Jonas Folger joins the Dynavolt Intact GP team alongside Sandro Cortesi, trying to give Cortesi a bit of a kick up the bum to go a bit quicker. Then Xavi Vierge stays with Tech 3. He finished the second half of the season with Tech 3, and Vierge was the second place rider to Edgar Pons in the CEV Championship. So interested to see how those two go. Now we get to the absolutely colossal Moto3 list. Fabio De Giantonio joins Grassini Racing. He raced the last race of the year with the Grassini squad in place of the injured Andrea Locatelli. He was also quite quick in the Red Bull Rookies. Interesting to see what he does. Fuck, I said interesting again. I really need to stop. Anyway, Romano Fenati, he stays with the Sky Racing Team VR46. Make or break year for Fenati. I mean, you know, he came onto the scene with such a bang, but it seems like since then, Fenati's just blown so hot and cold. On his day, he can win a race, but unfortunately, his day doesn't really seem to come around long enough, or often enough, rather. Maria Herrera stays with Team Leglis, although they are now on KTM machines, as opposed to the rebadged KTM Husqvarna, all that silliness. Adam Norridan, very interesting rider. He joins the Drive M7 SICK Racing team, the SICK Racing team switching to Honda machinery. Adam Norridan was in the Asia Talent team in the CEV. This is another reason you should watch the CEV, because most of these names will be familiar to you. Adam Norridan, I think he scored 2 points throughout the entire CEV season. Adam Norodin is a Malaysian rider, and he will be riding for a Malaysian team. So maybe that helped. But yeah, a bit surprised that Adam Norodin got a world championship ride, in all honesty. Nicolo Belega, the junior world champion, he moves up with the Sky Racing team. Nicolo Belega is a name to watch. He'll be running number 8 next year. I would definitely keep an eye on him. He is really tall, as we've said, and as we always talk about in commentary for the CEV. But he's definitely going to be aggressive in Moto3. I'm not sure he'll be able to win a championship, but once he gets a chance to move up to Moto2, watch out, because this kid is rapid. Jorge Navarro stays with Australia Galicia. Navarro, pretty solid tip for the championship, I'd say. Alexi Masbou enters his final season in the lightweight class due to the age restrictions. He stays with Saxoprint RTG, who have switched to Peugeot machinery. The Peugeot is basically just a rebadged Mahindra machine. Livio Loi stays with RW Racing, staying with Honda. Then Andrea Migno, he gets another season with Sky Racing Team VR46. John McPhee stays with Saxoprint, also switching to Peugeot machinery. Hopefully that Mahindra gets a bit quicker next year. Gabriel Rodrigo somehow gets another year with the RBA Racing Team. Hopefully Rodrigo's quicker as well. Fabio Quartararo switches to the Leopard Racing squad, as Leopard Racing also switched to KTM. From everything I've heard, KTM are definitely treating Leopard Racing as a full factory team along with the Red Bull team. So I reckon that Quartararo might be able to deliver on a lot of his potential next year. Quartararo came in with such a bang in the first few rounds, and then he sort of wilted away as there were one or two personal issues for him, and he maybe didn't have the best preparation going in. But he's back with Christian Lundberg, the guy who discovered him and who is the technical director of that Leopard Racing team. So I reckon that that could be a good calming and mentoring influence for Quartararo, who is clearly quick and, you know, clearly has a lot of talent. Then Francesco Bagnaia stays with MAPFRE team Mahindra on the Mahindra. Nicolo Antonelli stays with Ongetta Rivercold. Tatsuki Suzuki stays with CIP. Stefano Manzi gets another run with Team Italia. Ennea Bastianini, despite some rumours that he was going to Australia Galicia, he is in fact staying at Grassini Racing, as Grassini do opt to stay with Honda. The hot rumour was that Grassini would be switching to Peugeot machinery, but they're staying put and really going to push Ennea Bastianini as a title challenger. Juan Mir, another junior world championship graduate, he moves up to the world championship with Leopard Racing on the KTM. Mir ran the KTM at the last round of the CEV junior world championship at Valencia. He had been running a Honda year, and yeah, he was pretty quick on the KTM, able to adapt pretty well. So another one to watch. Darren Binder gets a second year with the Altox Reset energy drink team on the Mahindra. Brad Binder, his elder brother, stays with the Red Bull KTM IO squad. Binder has been doing private testing and was quite quick, not quite as quick as Jorge Navarro. Brad Binder also got a run out just for a bit of fun on Johan Zarco's Moto2 machine. Stefano Valtellini, another rider from the Junior World Championship, he joins Team Italia on the Mahindra. Aaron Canet, again, CEV, series you should watch. He moves up with Australia Galicia. Lorenzo Della Porta stays with Team Leglise. Andrea Locatelli, interestingly, moves to Leopard Racing. I'm curious to see how Locatelli does go, because he had a really good qualifying and race in Austin this year, but other than that, Locatelli hasn't really impressed me. Juanfran Guevara switches to the RBA Racing team. Bo Benschneider, the Dutch Red Bull rookie champion, he joins the World Championship with Red Bull KTM IO. Then Philip Ertl stays with Scheld GP Racing on the KTM. Hiroki Ono moves to the Honda Team Asia squad, obviously with Hondas. Jakob Kornfahl stays with the Drive M7 squad. As we said earlier with Norodin, Drive M7 have swapped to Honda machinery. Jorge Martin stays with the MAPFRE Team Mahindra Aspar squad. Kyrell Idant-Pauwi, he moves to the World Championship from, guess where? The CEV. And he'll be partnering Hiroki Ono in Honda Team Asia. Martin Van Haren, yet again, another CEV rider. Maybe not the fastest rider in that series, but he'll be joining CIP. Jules Daniello gets another year on the Ongetta Rivercold bike. And Carol Haneke, who managed to crash 24 times in the year, he moves to the Altox team after unfortunately losing out on that Red Bull seat. Carol Haneke, for those who care, he got his head shaved at the after party in Valencia. So be sure to go on either the Instagram of Brad Binder or of Carol Haneke to see a video of a poor Czech boy getting held down by a whole team of mechanics and having his long flowing locks taken from his head. It was absolutely absolutely horrifying to see. But yeah, Haneke crashed too much. Let's be honest, you know, we all thought Nicholas Ayo crashed a fair bit, but boy oh boy, 24 crashes in a year, the most out of all three classes for Haneke. Very, very unfortunate. We'll quickly run over superbike testing, as there weren't so many bikes, before we move on to full MotoGP testing. So obviously, with all of these superbike times, take them with a grain of salt. They're coming from the Speedweek website, Speedweek, the German publication. Most of these World Superbike teams were out testing in Aragon. There was no official live timing, so, you know, that's why grain of salt with all these times. But allegedly, Jonathan Rea led with a 150.3, really solid lap from the Kawasaki man. Chaz Davies was second with a 151 dead. Davies was apparently mostly focusing on electronic setup and different suspension. Again, you know, grain of salt. Who knows what these press releases say and all that sort of stuff. Tom Sykes third with a 151 dead as well. Alex Lowe's on the new Yamaha, a 151, so pretty solid from him. Xavi Fores on the Aruba.it Ducati, a 151.3. Fores is just there helping out with testing, as Davide Giuliano is still not fully fit, having broken his back twice last season, although Davide Giuliano was able to ride, what was it, the Panigale 859 or whatever it is, with the hideous exhaust pipe for the European market at EICMA. But anyway, EICMA, crazy. Everyone's making a scrambler. How odd. Michael Vandermark, he was sixth fastest with a 151.7. Then Nicky Hayden, decent debut for Hayden actually, 151.8. You know, pretty far off the pace of Jonathan Rea, allegedly 1 second, but only 1.1 of a second, a tenth, i.e. Behind Michael Vandermark. So, you know, Vandermark's had a whole year on that bike, so pretty solid progress from Hayden. And then Sylvain Gintoli with a 152.5. So, not sure what Gintoli was up to, but that Aragon test was affected quite badly by fog. They only really got a couple of half days, and that was about it. So, hopefully we'll be able to have an official World Superbike test to get some proper timing, because, yeah, as I said with that, you know, grain of salt. It was really interesting to see, actually, that during the private Valencia test for the Moto2 and Moto3 teams, that test was organized by Mark VDS. They had proper full timing, so I can't remember where I found the times, but there are some times out there, you know, proper sector times and all of that, and you can see how they all did. Johann Zarco was leading the way. Zarco looking really strong again for next year as he tries to become the first rider to successfully defend their Moto2 title. I still think that Zarco could be strong, but I think that Alex Rins is going to really make him fight for it, because I think that Rins will have a strong season with his year of learning out of the way. And I think that if Rins hadn't been locked into a two-year contract with Cito Pons, that Rins probably could have gotten a somewhat decent ride in MotoGP. You know, Alex Rins is sort of already being looked at for a ride with Yamaha, maybe first with the Tech 3 squad if things don't quite work out for Pol Espargaró, before potentially moving up to replace someone like Valentino Rossi, who, after recent events, may not want to continue on racing as long as he first thought. But certainly Rossi will be racing in 2016, and that is what this show is all about. 2016, we had our first proper test with the Michelin tyres. Some teams and riders were running the spec electronics. Obviously, we moved from having a spec ECU in 2015 to also having a spec electronic software package in 2016. So it's an air quotes level playing field. I would first like to say a big thank you to everyone who tweeted and emailed in about the commentary work. For those who don't know, I was lucky enough to get to commentate with Matthew Burt and Dylan Gray on the MotoGP test. I think we did something like 13 hours of coverage over the 2 days. And for me, it was a huge honor. You know, Birdie and Dylan, they're both masters at what they do. You know, both those guys have forgotten more than I'll ever know, especially Dylan. You know, you could ask him just a tiny question about brake calipers and he could easily talk for 2 hours. Both those guys are incredible, and it was a huge honor to do that. If for some reason you do want to go back and watch testing, I think the full videos are up on MotoGP.com. So, yeah, you can go check those out. And, yeah, a big thank you to everyone with their kind comments. And hopefully we'll get to do some other commentary stuff. As I said sort of earlier in the show, we also do the commentary for the CEV. So be sure to go check that out, because, you know, aside from me sounding stupid while talking over it, it is some really good racing. So maybe you just want to mute it and watch the racing But anyway, onto the Michelin test. So, you know, coming into this test, we sort of knew from whispers that the Michelin front tire, not quite up to the same spec of the Bridgestone, but the Michelin rear was absolutely excellent, just poor. And that's, you know, sort of what we saw. And it's not so much that the Michelin front tire is bad, it's just that it's not as good as the Bridgestone tire. And all of these, it was Bradley Smith who really highlighted this. He said that, you know, all of these guys out there who are out crashing their brains out in this first test and all these private tests, they're trying to ride a Michelin tire like a Bridgestone, which you just can't do. Bridgestone is famous for their incredible front tires. And Michelin have always had a stronger rear. It's in the DNA of the tires. But yeah, for those people who are sort of, you know, up in arms that, oh, Michelin are gonna kill it and all that sort of stuff, it's not so much that Michelin have done a bad job, it's just that the riders need time to adapt and time to change their style. One rider who could probably benefit a lot from the change in riding style is Danny Pedrosa. With a really grippy rear tire, the Michelin sort of benefit a rider who can pick it up and stand it up out of the corner really quick, and that's something that Danny Pedrosa has always done really well. Even when he was riding with Casey Stoner, Stoner always said that, you know, Danny Pedrosa is really good at getting it picked up and out of the corner. And partially that's down to how Danny Pedrosa rides because of his size. You know, as a smaller guy, he sort of has to get it up and get on the gas like that. But yeah, as we said, a lot of crashes all on the front end. And that's sort of what everyone was saying is that, you know, you tip it in, front feels good, front feels good, front feels good. Oh no, we've crashed. And it's sort of that you have no warning as to whether the front's going to go. That riders were somewhat complaining about. In terms of testing the spec ECU, both Mark Marquez and Danny Pedrosa, they had some runs on it. The two Japanese Suzuki test riders, Suda and Aoki, they also both had a run on the spec ECU. One of the major guys who was running the spec ECU was Scott Redding, the Pramac Ducati squad. Sent Redding out basically in full 2016 mode, Michelin tires, spec ECU, and GP15. And that's actually something that I wanted to talk about is how these guys who are air quotes on new bikes, you know, air quotes newbies, guys like Scott Redding, it can sometimes be an advantage to swap bikes, or maybe not an advantage, but you know, it can give a slight edge when you're swapping bikes and when there are such big changes as a spec electronic system and new tires. Is since Redding has no experience on that Ducati, you know, he has no muscle memory and no memories in his mind of how that bike should react. So he's getting on that bike and approaching it fully in 2016 mode with, you know, this is a completely new slate. Whereas guys like Jorge Lorenzo and like Valentino Rossi, you know, they spent so many years on that Yamaha with the Yamaha electronics that now they changed that. You know, they know that their M1 should do this out of turn two, but it's not because, you know, the electronics aren't kicking in or the front feels funny. So yeah, Scott Redding, he had a pretty good test, but we'll start at the top of the timesheets. Mark Marquez led the way with a 131.060, really fast lap from Marquez. Obviously, with these laps, it's quite difficult to tell if they were set on the 2015 bike. Lots of the teams were running 2015 bikes to compare the Bridgestones to the Michelin. So basically, you know, Bridgestones out, Michelin straight in to compare the setting and see how they felt. But some teams like Repsol Honda also had a 2016 lab bike there. It seemed like of all the teams that Repsol Honda sort of brought the most to this post-race Valencia test, they had a new frame, a revised engine, spec ECU, and it was Marc Márquez who led the way over the 2 days. Surprisingly, Maverick Vinales in second, just a tenth slower than Marc Márquez. Vinales is another one of these guys who's sort of like Redding, as he doesn't have much experience on the big bikes. He's sort of like a sponge, you know. People say that it's a lot easier to learn a language when you're young because, you know, your brain's more spongy or something. I don't know, but I think it's sort of like that you know, since Vinales doesn't have years and years of experience and muscle memory to rely on, is that he's able to adapt a lot quicker and change his style to suit the Michelin tires. But Vinales was second, really strong Michelin debut for Vinales. Vinales hadn't done any of the private tests leading up to Valencia on the Michelin tires, because Davide Brivio, you know, team boss of Team Suzuki Exeter, he'd wanted to keep Vinales focused on his rookie season. So really, really strong debut from Vinales. And if they can get that Suzuki sorted next year, then, you know, Vinales could definitely be one to watch. He's been absolutely incredible all year. Then just behind Vinales was Danny Pedrosa. As I said, Pedrosa's style, in theory on paper, suits the Michelin tires quite well with not too much adaptation. Pedroza was not really a fan of the spec electronics. None of the factory riders really enjoyed the spec electronics. Valentino Rossi said that it was a step back to 2008. Meanwhile, both Suzuki riders said that apparently the software they had been using in 2015 is basically the same as the 2016 software, so they weren't too worried. Alicia Spargaro was fourth, so maybe that's why Suzuki did sort of have a bit of a leg up over the rest of the field. But yeah, Suzuki seemed to have adapted well to the Michelin tyres. Obviously, it's testing, so, you know, lots of riders with lots of different strategies in mind. Guys like Jorge Lorenzo and Marc Marquez, they were not only testing new bikes, but Michelin had bought a couple of different compounds for them to try as well. So, you know, a variety of different things going on there. Jorge Lorenzo, fifth fastest and 0.2 slower than Marc Marquez. Lots of these times, by the way, were either faster than the fastest lap of the race or were within, you know, 0.3 of a second. So certainly the Michelin tyres aren't some huge step back and we're not going to be a second slower every lap or something. The Michelin tyres do look really competitive, especially for their first major time on track. An interesting comment that Marc Marquez made. I know this show's a bit all over the place. I'm sorry, unfortunately. Marquez said that he'd felt really good on the Michelin tyres in Aragon, and when he got to Valencia, he started pushing like he had been in Aragon. Marquez was one of the first riders to crash in the test, and Marquez commented that the Michelins more than the Bridgestones seem to be affected by the type of asphalt they're on, so that'll be interesting to see if there are some riders who go a bit quicker at some tracks throughout the year. Jorge Lorenzo 5th, Cal Crutchlow 6th, good result for Cal. Valentino Rossi 7th, and within half a second of Marc Marquez. Andrea Iannone, who had a fair few crashes, he was in 8th ahead of Pol Espargaro, Bradley Smith, Daniele Petrucci with the GP15 in 11th. Loris Baz, incredible result from Loris Baz to be 12th. Loris Baz ahead of Andrea Dovizioso. Loris Baz and Scott Redding were two of the biggest guys who impressed me, obviously both quite physically big, excuse the pun. So yeah, Baz 12th, Scott Redding 13th, Baz 0.7 behind Marquez, and then Scott Redding 0.8 behind Marquez. But, you know, first time on those bikes, Loris Baz, as he's so tall, he needs a different seat unit. And unfortunately, with the limited resources there, Avintia couldn't make him a seat unit, so they just raised him about 10 centimeters out of the seat. I think there was on Twitter, I'm trying to think which Twitter account, maybe Off Bikes, that had quite a good photo of Loris Baz's seat, and it basically was 10 inches of foam to try and raise the Frenchman up so he could sort of sit over the seat, if that makes sense. Trying to explain visuals on an internet radio show, probably not my smartest idea. But anyway, Hector Barbera, 14th, as we said. No more open class next year, as everyone is on the same software. So everyone, apart from the likes of Aprilia and KTM, and I think Suzuki, everyone will be on 22 litres of fuel, apart from those three teams that I just mentioned. Everyone will have the exact same tyres, no more soft qualifying tyre crap like that. Everyone will be on the same electronic package. So it's on paper, it's a much more fair grid, but, you know, as testing shows, apart from Andrea Dovizioso, you know, the fastest guys with the best teams will probably still be the fastest guys, even if you stuck them all out there on, you know, Honda Groms. Like, all of these riders are incredibly talented and are the fastest men in the world for a reason. Andrea Dovizioso, disappointing 15th. Jack Miller in 16th. It was very interesting listening to some of Jack Miller's debriefs. Miller obviously now stepping onto the factory Honda. He really enjoyed the seamless gearbox as opposed to the conventional one on the open Honda that he was on. Miller was running with the 2015 electronics. And I believe Miller's exact quote during his media scrum debrief was, "Me, Nikki, and Eugene have been telling everyone all year that these Magneti Marelli electronics are fucking shit, and now people finally believe us." So clearly Jack Miller is losing none of his Australian charm with the Mark VDS squad. Miller in 16th. Miller was looking good on the bike. There's a clip floating around Twitter. Was it? I think it was GP Extra was the Twitter account, maybe, or MotoGP Extra. I'll try and find it and post a link in the show notes. They had an incredible clip from testing of Miller getting incredibly sideways into turn 9, and it was one of the most beautiful things I've seen on a motorcycle. So Miller, you know, clearly not being slow and getting straight up to speed with the Mark VDS squad, and I think he could do a bit of damage next year, honestly. Eugene Laverty, 17th. He had a fair few crashes as well. Tito Rabat, he did the most laps of the test, 18th fastest Rabat in the 132 mids. So pretty solid debut from Rabat. And, you know, as we all expected, Rabat straight to work with the pounding out laps. One of the things I'm most interested to see is if Rabat stays with the CBR 600 or if he moves to a CBR 1000 for lapping Almeria. Although I'm guessing that he might stop that, as you know, this year he had two quite serious injuries, broken wrist and broken collarbone from training at Almeria. So we'll see how he goes. Stefan Bradl on the Aprilia in 19th. Aprilia are planning to bring their 2016 bike to Sepang 1, as are Suzuki. At Eicher, Suzuki air quotes revealed their air quotes 2016 bike, although that to me looked to just be a new paint job. I tried to compare some photos from a similar angle and it didn't look like anything had changed apart from a couple more yellow stickers. So yeah, I don't know. You know, obviously it's mostly the aero stuff that we can see from the outside, and who knows, maybe the engine's completely different on the inside. But yeah, I'm interested to see how the Suzuki and the Aprilia look, and B, and more importantly, how fast they go. Yoni Hernandez in 20th, ahead of Alvaro Bautista. Michele Pirro in 22nd. Pirro just did a couple of laps to test out a camera on one of the Ducati winglets, which was a pretty incredible view. Then Suda, the Japanese test rider, 23rd. Mike Demeglio, 24th. Demeglio now the official Aprilia test rider. And Aoki rounded out the 25 riders. For reference, the pole position record set by Jorge Lorenzo in 2015 was a 130.011. So that means that Marc Marquez was about a second slower, more or less, a bit more than a second slower on the Michelin tyres. But to me, being a second behind the pole position record, not the fastest lap of the race, the pole position record was absolutely incredible. The circuit record set by Jorge Lorenzo, i.e. the fastest lap of the race, was a 131.36, which Marquez was 0.6 of a second fast, or 0.3 of a second faster than, sorry. So, you know, based on some things like that, I think that obviously there's room to improve in terms of riders adapting to the Michelins, and maybe Michelin will bring one or two tire revisions. But the big thing is going to be the electronics. You know, a lot of riders complained that the electronics were quite basic. But we had the Magneti Morelli man in the commentary booth to talk about, and he basically said that, you know, none of these guys are using the electronics to maybe more than 15% of their potential, and much like adapting to the Michelin tyres, it will just take time for these teams and these riders to adapt to these new Magneti Morelli spec electronics. So yeah, it'll be wait and see. I'm really excited to head to Sepang when all of these teams and riders will have had a chance to think about it, adapt, change their motorcycles a bit. Ducati will also be bringing the GP16 to Sepang 1. Or I guess it's now just Sepang because we don't have the two Sepang tests anymore. The GP16 will be more of an evolution rather than a revolution as the GP15 was. So let's see how many winglets they can jam onto the front of that one. And yeah, I'm excited for Sepang. After Sepang, we have a test in Phillip Island and then also the pre-Qatar test. So I can't wait for 2016. You know, I personally think that 2015, regardless of, you know, how much we hype on about it, I think that 2015 really was the best season ever, and not just in a MotoPod joking way, but I think that especially in the MotoGP class, it was just an incredible year. You know, the racing was so, so close. Having gone back and done all of the season reviews and stuff like that, almost every race, an incredible battle somewhere through it. Sure, Jorge Lorenzo was able to break away in some races, but behind him there were great battles, you know, be it for second or third. And the drama wasn't great to see, and by the end of it, you know, I'm sure that just like me, everyone out there is pretty tired of all the drama and stuff. But, you know, it got us all talking, and it got the world talking about MotoGP. I mean, I can't remember in any other time in my life that any MotoGP-related topic has been trending anywhere on Twitter, yet alone to be the number one trending topic on Twitter worldwide. After the Sepang clash, obviously, Valentino Rossi was the number one trending topic in the world. That's just insane. And I think it did actually bring a lot of people into the sport, which is, yeah, it's important to keep fans coming in, and hopefully they stay for the great racing, because 2015 certainly was an excellent year. I hope 2016 is even better. I think that these Michelin tyres could throw up one or two surprises with the likes of Maverick Vinales, but, you know, the championship's probably still going to be between either a Yamaha rider or a Honda rider, unless Ducati can really pull something out and Andrea Iannone can sort it out. I personally don't think that Andrea Dovizioso will ever challenge for a title. You know, at the start of the year, everyone was saying, oh, yeah, W will probably finish high in the championship. Well, Andrea Iannone said ciao and then managed to absolutely pants Andrea Dovizioso throughout the year. So, yeah, you know, 2016 starts now. Apart from the one or two shows reflecting on the season, it's pretty much going to be full steam ahead looking at 2016 and trying to figure out who's going to be fastest. I'm not sure what the what sort of information we'll get from testing. I know that we'll definitely have full testing times from Sepang, and on, I think it's on February that Moto2 and Moto3 have their first official test. Obviously, with Moto2 private tests, it's a bit hard to judge because in Moto2, you can basically stick any CBR 600 engine in a Moto2 bike. Most teams now have X race engines. But there are a lot of teams, especially the slightly smaller teams, that what they do is they'll take a World Supersport grade CBR 600 engine, which is obviously slightly faster than a Moto2 engine, and they'll put that in the bike to get some good results for testing. Now, you might be wondering, oh, why would they do that? You know, that's just false data. Well, being fast in testing, you know, you can then go to a sponsor and say, hey, look, you know, this kid, he was third fastest in testing. You should give us some sponsorship money. And then, you know, they sign the contract and then, oh, no, it turns out he was slow as hell. So, whoops, but, you know, we still have your money. But anyway, just, yep, thank you to everyone out there in Motopodland for sticking with us through the 2015 season. Once again, Motopod at motopodcast.com for all your questions, comments, concerns, criticisms, and all that sort of jazz. My name has been Harry Lloyd. I'm sure that almost everyone out there in Motopodland is now more than sick of my voice. I know I'm sick of my own voice. And yeah, we'll catch everyone next week. I'll probably be back on the show to talk about some of these smaller domestic championships so that we can really have a good idea of what's going on around the world. And yeah, I'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.